Welcome to another episode of First Up. I'm Brian White, joined as always by Jasmine Jetting Gonzalez. Today's episode features Dada Ibrahimovic as we dive into the new expected changes to the free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA, and the RISE Act application. Things are expected to get a lot simpler and easier for families to complete. If you have questions, our guest has answers.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode. We are here today with Dada Ibrahimovic. I will pass it to her to introduce herself.
Thank you, Jasmine. So my name is Dada Ibrahimovic. I am was a first-gen student. I went to St. Xavier University. And right now, my role at ISAC is I am a professional development specialist. So thank you for inviting me on the podcast.
Thank you for being here with us.
Woo, look at there we go. So today we're going to be asking you questions that our listeners might find helpful as we approach the new FAFSA coming in December of this year. So before we even get into that, can you just define FAFSA for the people that may not know?
Yeah, for sure. So the FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. So the FAFSA is now a graduation requirement for students in the state of Illinois. So it's essentially the application that students have to do in order to see if they are eligible for financial aid, either federal or state. And then it gets sent to the institutions, and then the institutions can determine which aid that the student is eligible for.
And then just knowing that there are changes coming soon, what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen that you would like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. So I do want to lay out a bit of context before we get into it. First and foremost is that the FAFSA is going to be released in December this year instead of October 1st, as it has been for the past, I don't know, I think over 10 years at this point.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so that is because there are a lot of changes. It is the most amount of changes in decades. So that's why, you know, it's processing and they're running their, what would you call it? Like tests, they're doing testing just to make sure that the site is going to be ready for students and parents. So that's the first thing that I want to mention. Also, the next thing is that the application will now be available in 11 languages instead of just English and Spanish. So unfortunately, we do not know which languages they are quite yet. They have not released that, but we know that it's the 11 most common languages in the United States.
Oh, that's cool. At least they like considered we're going to common languages. Okay, no, that's
right,
good.
Right. So other things that I want to say. So if this December is your first time filling out a FAFSA, maybe some of these changes won't really mean anything to y'all just because the FAFSA is going to be new for you.
You don't know what it used to be like.
So this is going to be your first FAFSA no matter what. So I did want to mention that. But other than that, it is still important, whether you're a returning applicant or a new applicant, to be aware of the changes.
Is it at least going to, like this new one, is it going to be simpler, better? Or like, how is that?
Yeah, so the changes were intended to make the form simpler for students to be able to complete the application a little bit faster than in previous years. They have cut down on the questions quite a bit.
Well, that's good.
Right, exactly. So hopefully it'll be easier for students and parents to be able to fill out the application. And I have seen a little bit of the previews, and I do think that it will be a lot easier for students and families to complete the application now, for sure.
You think quicker too, since it has less questions?
We hope so.
Right? We hope so, right? Because then what if the question's really hard?
So just a couple of other changes that I want to mention is the FAFSA will now be a role-based form. So in previous years, if a student signs in, they can complete the entire application, or if a parent signs in for the student, the parent can complete the entire application. Now, it is not going to be that way. The student will only be able to complete the student section on the FAFSA, and the parent or the student's spouse, if they have a spouse, will be completing their corresponding section. So in order to do that, each contributor will need an FSA ID in order to log into the form and sign it electronically.
That solves a lot of problems, too, because as you all know, myself, Jasmine, and Dada, we all in the past have worked with students and helped them complete FAFSAs. But usually we do see that sometimes parents might fill out the wrong section or the students might fill out the parent section. So I think that will help a lot.
Right. We did see, you know, people double reporting their income information. You know, let's say a parent goes in and there's going to be, you know, income information for the parent and for the student. But sometimes we saw parents double report their own income thinking that it was just asking them again. Right. And that causes a lot of issues.
It's just hard
too.
To tell when it switches from student to parent or from parent to student. It was confusing. So the fact that now they would essentially both log in, have their own application, like they're only going to be asked questions for their section.
Right, right. Exactly.
So then that hopefully resolves that whole confusion thing.
We're hoping so.
Yeah.
I also just want to lay a bit of background about what an FSA ID is in case students that are listening don't know what it is.
Yes.
So
please.
The FSA ID is essentially the login to the FSA website. So it is a username and password. You have to sign up for it, and then you're able to access the FAFSA. And if you have student loans, you can also access to see what the status of your student loans are, and if you need to enter into a repayment program. It has all of that stuff too.
So you don't need it just for now, but you need it for now and for later. Okay?
Right, exactly.
So keep it. It's put it in your safe. You know, write it down and put it, you know, somewhere really safe.
And don't share your information with anyone.
No, because you do not want them logging into your account.
Right, exactly. So it definitely is important to write down or take a picture of the username and password. I think writing it down is better. But, you know, if you have a notes app on your phone, a lot of students like using that. Just make sure to keep it safe just because it is entering into a federal site and you definitely don't want anybody else to access that. But I do also want to mention that the FSA ID is also going to be expanding who can create one. So I want to give you all a bit of context on that too. So it used to be, you know, if a parent did not have a social security number, they were not able to get an FSA ID. Mm-hmm. So what that meant is they were not able to electronically sign the FAFSA for a student. They would have to print out a signature page, send it in the mail to the Department of Ed, and it was just a whole process. They would have to wait weeks just to hear back.
Took
to see
forever.
Right. And let's say, you know, what if there was something wrong with the FAFSA? Then they would have to fix it, send in another signature page,
all
right?
Paper and mail and
And it takes like sometime. Up to 3 weeks to process. Right, exactly. So now all users, hopefully, are going to be able to create an FSA ID, even parents that don't have social security numbers. We don't necessarily know exactly what the process is going to look like to create an FSA ID without a social security number, but we know that it's going to be identity-based questions. So now, even parents without social security numbers, they can get an FSA ID, and then that will hopefully let students and parents sign electronically and have no need for those signature pages anymore. So
that would be awesome, because that would honestly, like, that would cut a lot of that time that is spent in the whole process. So I'm excited for that.
I agree. A lot of students that were in that situation, you know, counselors would try to help by having envelopes ready for them and stamps ready for them. But not all counselors, you know, had the resources to do that.
And there's so much you can do, right? But now all parents, social or not, will be able to do their own FSA ID.
Right.
And do their own section of the app, right?
Right, exactly. Okay. So in order to prepare for the FAFSA, students and parents, y'all can create your FSA IDs right now. The only people who can't right now are the parents without social security numbers. The process hasn't come out yet. It's going to come out when the FAFSA comes out. So I did want to mention that as well.
Okay, that's good to know.
Just to switch gears a little bit, I know that we have the RISE application as well for undocumented students. Will that application follow some of the changes that the FAFSA will?
Yeah. So the RISE Act application or the alternative application will also be patterned after the FAFSA and is also going to be coming out in December as well. So we're hoping that it's going to be as similar as it can be to the FAFSA with, you know, just how long they will have to make those updates, if that makes sense.
So once the FAFSA comes out, shortly after, the alternative app will come out with similar updates to what the FAFSA was.
Right, right? Exactly.
Okay. And then just to clarify, if I was a student, right, how do I know which application to fill out?
So the FAFSA is going to be for most students, and we do encourage that all students who are eligible for the FAFSA fill out the FAFSA. But the alternative application, first and foremost, is for state financial aid only. It's for the MAP grant. That is a grant for Illinois students. and it is for students that are undocumented. So if a student is undocumented, they are unfortunately not eligible to complete a FAFSA. That's why we created the alternative application. So there is still some eligibility requirements to fill out an alternative application, but it is for students that are undocumented. So if they are interested in filling out a financial aid application, they would just need to figure out if they meet the other eligibility requirements.
And where can they find information on that?
So it's on our website, isac.org/alternative app.
Okay. Y'all hear that? That is isac.org/alternative app. And it's APP with two P's, right?
Two P's.
Okay, cool. Just want to be very specific. Okay, so going back to the changes, were there any other updates or changes that we should be aware about?
There are numerous changes. I don't know how much y'all want me to get into.
Big ones, high level. The things that if I was a student, I should be aware of.
Well, if you're a returning student that's trying to do the FAFSA for your second time, say, for instance, you're a college student, and these changes might be different. So kind of looking at those changes.
Yeah.
Is that where you're getting
and like, what information do I need? Do I need new information or different information that I did when I first filled it out? Or yeah, like I would be having those questions.
Yeah, for sure. So another big change that I wanted to mention is about who's reported on the FAFSA. That has changed this year as well. For parents, like whose information needs to be reported on the FAFSA? So who is a parent for financial aid purposes hasn't changed. So it's still going to be biological, adoptive or step parents if they're married to a biological or adoptive parent. And also if both parents are unmarried and living together, both parents still need to be reported. The difference is if the parents are divorced.
Mm-hmm.
In previous years, it used to be who did the student live with the most in the past 12 months?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Right. So now that's no longer going to be the case. It's going to be which parent provided the most support in the past 12 months. So that's going to be a pretty big change for, you know, returning students, I think. They may have to, if they had, you know, divorced parents and they put the parent that they live with the most in the past 12 months, if that's not also the parent that provided the most financial support, they may need to change which parent is reported on the FAFSA.
Okay, so financial support.
Right.
Okay.
But in a case that both parents claim that they provide equal support, would it be the parent that makes the most money?
Exactly.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, because I feel like we get that question too, is like, well, both of my parents equally, you know, I live half and half with both parents. I switch. Like, what do I do? Like, okay, well, so you're saying whoever has the higher income.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, cool. Okay, that's good to know.
So just like as a parent and student completing the financial applications for the first time, you talked a little bit about what they could expect for the changes coming in December. But do you foresee any potential challenges like the languages used, financial information, additional tax forms? Have you gotten any experience with any of that stuff yet, or is that still coming?
So what was needed for the FAFSA in previous years is going to be the same as this year. So none of that is really changing. Some of the things that are going to be reported as assets will change. There are some updates to just asset information in general. So first, family size is going to look a little bit different this year. So family size will now be based on the number of tax exemptions claimed, and it'll be reported directly from the IRS. But there still will be a question in case since 2022, your family size has changed, for example, you will still be able to update it if it's wrong, but it will be imported now. So that's one difference. Another is that families with an adjusted gross income of $60,000 or higher will be required to answer the asset questions on the form. Other families, $60,000 and under, they won't have to report assets on the form. And also, there is no longer an exemption for small businesses with fewer than 100 employees or family farms. So the net value of the business and the family farm will need to be reported in that asset section.
Okay, so before, if your parents had a small business, but they had less than 100 employees, they wouldn't have to report those as an asset, right? But now you're saying they will.
Right.
Okay, so now, no matter what, if your parents have a small business, they'll have to report it as an asset.
Right.
No matter how many employees they have, whether it's one or 101.
Exactly.
Okay. That's good to know.
That's great information. And thank you, Dada, for sharing all the information as well. But before we go, I would just like to hear about your experience completing the FAFSA when you were in high school or when you were moving from high school to college, either or. But what was your experience like with the FAFSA and completing it?
So I was scared to complete a FAFSA, I will be honest, though I did have a brother that was only 1 year older than me. So at least he already knew the process. My parents kind of already knew the process. So I was lucky in that regard, but I was still nervous to complete it. I remember I was filling it out and I didn't capitalize my name and my brother reprimanded me for it. He's like, you have to make this application perfect. You can't do one thing wrong on this application. So I was definitely scared to fill it out. I wasn't even sure if we filled it out correctly the first time, but you know, everything went smoothly and I got my financial aid. So
it went through. So
everything went through. Everything was fine. So
and I know me and Jasmine, we shared our experience first completing the FAFSA. I know for me personally, I had to do it by myself. We talked about that a little bit on our previous episode.
Yeah, no, when I completed the FAFSA for the first time, I was like, this is where I get the money for college. So it's super important. I was the same way as Dad. I was like, oh my God, am I doing this right? I'm like, well, here goes nothing. Submit. Like, submit. Like, I was like, okay. But back then when I completed it, I got confused about the student and the parent section. And that really tripped me up. And thank God they had like FAFSA workshops at my school. So I went during the FAFSA workshop and my counselor was like, no, like, Jasmine, don't put it in there. Like, that's your parents' information. I'm like, oh, okay. So thank God. Definitely, y'all, if you guys have a FAFSA workshop at your school, definitely attend because you'll get the expert, you know, professional who's there. And just so you know, it is free to complete the free application for federal student aid or the alternative app. I have worked with students who like paid $100 or $200 or whatever to have someone help them complete the application and they thought it was a paid application. I was like, no, I felt so bad, but definitely take advantage of all the resources and the workshops and all that good stuff that your school has. Or if not, definitely check us out on ISAC.org. I'll kind of pass it to Dada though to do the plug because she knows where we can find the ISAC core and their events. And if I'm a student who needs help completing the FAFSA, what do I do?
Right. So if your school doesn't have any FAFSA completion events or financial aid application completion events, luckily we do have the ISAC Corps all around the state. So on our website, or if you Google find your local ISAC Corps member, it'll pop up. And all you have to do is put in your zip code and then it'll show you the most local ISAC Corps member to you. And what's nice about the ISAC Corps is they can either meet you at your school virtually, or, you know, if you really want your parent to be there, they're working during a school day, right? They could meet you after school at like a coffee shop or Panera if needed. So they are flexible. They have that flexible schedule. So if your school does not offer opportunities like that, the ISAC Corps is still there for you as a free resource.
I'm so happy we have that in Illinois.
I wish I had known about it.
Yeah, I know. Same. I was so nervous. I'm like, we only have this 1 hour that's offered at our school. Like, yeah.
And if you didn't get a complete, like, what were you supposed to do?
I would like to thank Dada for joining us and sharing valuable information about the changes coming. For the parents out there, if you do have questions, please visit ISAC.org, ISAC.org. Or you can also visit studentportal.isac.org/firstgen. To find that toolbox that Dada referenced where you can find your nearest core member. So again, thank you, Dada, for that information. We will actually be back with another episode in the future to kind of give you guys updates closer to that date so that you all are well prepared. And if you do have any questions, you can reach out to us. Thanks again, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
We would like to thank our guest, Dada Ibrahimovic, for joining us on our podcast today. We would like to thank ISAC for supporting us, the First Generation Scholars Network, for encouraging us to put this podcast together. Thanks to our producers, Joey Lieberman and Matt Montez. Last but not least, we would like to thank our listeners for tuning in. We hope you'll join us on our next episode.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not directly reflect the opinions of ISEC. We hope you enjoyed this episode and have a good day.